सर्वधर्मान् परित्यज्य मामेकं शरणं व्रज, अहं त्वं सर्वपापेभ्यो मोक्षयिष्यामि मा शुचः। सो हियर इन दिस वर्स भगवद गीता लॉर्ड कृष्णा इज समराइजिंग भगवद गीता एंड गिविंग द एसेंस ऑफ भगवद गीता इन दिस वर्स, because we all know that in the beginning of the battlefield or in the beginning of the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was perplexed about his duty. He could not understand what was his duty in the war, world war, you can say. This Mahabharata was a world war. we can say first world war. So in this world war, that's why it is called Mahabharata, greater Bharata. Means at that time India was not limited to this tract of land which is called India now. That time India means it was the whole world. That is greater Bharata. The emperor of Hastinapur, what was the capital at that time, so he was the emperor of the whole world. That means the kings of different parts of the world, they were ruling their respective kingdoms under one ruler, the emperor of Hastinapur. So Maharaj Yudhishthir, Maharaj Parikshit, they were the emperors of the whole world. So when this battle of Kurukshetra took place, then all the kings of the whole world took part, either in Pandava's side or Kaurava's side. They choose whether they have to support dharma or they have to support adharma. So though seemingly this war of Kurukshetra was a family war between two parties in of the same family, but actually it was not based on family interests. It was based on religion and irreligion. Because these two parties, one party was following the path of religion, another party was following the path of irreligion. So we can see that the Kaurava's party, Duryodhana's party, they were following the path of irreligion. And by following the path of irreligion, they usurped the rightful kingdom of Maharaj Yudhishthir. He was the rightful heir of this kingdom. But they usurped and they played tricks while playing the game. So in this way, the Pandavas, those who are very, very truthful, they were banished from their own kingdom. And they are wandering here and they are begging for their livelihood. So, great injustice was done to the Pandavas, and also great injustice was done to their wife, Draupadi. She was dragged shamelessly to the court of Dhritarashtra, assembly of Dhritarashtra, and Dushasan, the younger brother of Duryodhan, wanted to strip her naked in front of everyone. This was a great insult to a great woman in the history. So In this way, the Kauravas followed the path of irreligion. And the Pandavas, though they were insulted, they were banished from their kingdom, still they did not give up the path of religion. This is actually a great lesson for all of us, that how we should follow the path of religion in spite of all of our difficulties, all of our inconveniences. Then what will happen? Krishna will support us. Krishna will give his blessings to us. Same thing happened to the Pandavas. They had no one. No one spoke in their favor. In the assembly of the Kurus, even Bhishma Pitama was there, great grandfather Bhishma was there, but he did not speak a word in favor of Pandavas. Those who are very righteous people, those who are following the path of religion. But they have no support there. Only Vidura spoke up. He did not care for his post, or he did not care for his honor. That's why Duryodhana insulted Vidura, because he spoke the truth. So that has happened in the history. When someone follows the path of truthfulness, one speaks the truth, he'll suffer. But that does not mean that will discourage us to follow the path of religion. Because at the end of Bhagavad Gita, in the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya says that in which side there is victory? Jatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Jatra Partha Dhanurdhara. Tatra Sri Vijaya Bhuti Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. Wherever there is Arjuna, the great archer, and where there is Krishna, the promulgator of religion, the protector of religion, certainly victory will be in that side. So we have to decide in our life that whether we will be following the path of religion or we will be following the path of irreligion. That will determine that whether we will receive Krishna's mercy or not. We can see nowadays that so many people, every day you can see in the newspaper about the corrupted officials, about the corrupted politicians. Every day there will be some news. Someone did such scam, this thing, that thing, you know. So this is not very encouraging to the people in general. That these people, they are usurping public funds which people are giving the share of their income to the public exchequer. And these people are usurping that public funds for their own self-interest. So they are following the path of irreligion. And certainly they are going to be punished, whether by the government or by the Supreme Lord himself. No one will go unpunished or unnoticed. So that's why, as you are all young boys and girls, and you are now molding your life in a particular direction, so you have to take lesson from Bhagavad Gita and choose a path, which path you will follow, what path will bring you all prosperity, which path will bring you all blessings of the Supreme Lord and all other great souls, and what path will bring you everything in life, and you can attain the greatest destination of life, the goal of life. And what is the goal of life? Any of you know? Raise your hands. Okay. What is the goal of your life? Going to Golok Vrindavan. Okay. Okay, something. So, and who lives in Golok Vrindavan? Krishna himself. So we'll go back to Krishna. If we follow Krishna's path. Isn't it? If we follow Krishna's path, we'll go back to Krishna. If you follow Duryodhana's path, where will you go? He'll go to hell, Jamaraj's court. So you have to take a decision on your life, that what path you are going to follow, and what will be your destination. That's why Mahabharata has influenced the life of so many people. Because this Mahabharata, and specifically this teachings of Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of Mahabharata, has shown direction to millions of people in their life. Though this Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago, sometimes people think, oh, this knowledge has become very old. And in this modern world, we need some modern knowledge, not old knowledge. Sometimes people say this. But we have to understand that this modern so-called knowledge has so many faults. And who is giving this knowledge? This modern knowledge, this mundane people who do not follow the path of religion. The scientists, the great historians, the great poets, the great philosophers, they are great in the name only. But you go to their personal life, then you will see what nonsense they are doing in their personal life. They are woman hunters, they are drunkards, they are cheaters, they are doing all these things. All these four things which we are trying to avoid. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. They are doing all those four things. And they are posing themselves as great philosophers, great writers, great scientists, and giving knowledge to us. And we are such fools that we are accepting their knowledge as the ultimate sublime knowledge. Because we don't know that what real knowledge is. A person who is free from all these four things, who is free from four defects, you know the four defects of human beings. Anyone know? What are the four defects in every human being? Okay, yourself?
Imperfect senses.
Imperfect senses.
To be illusion. To be mistake. Cheating propensity.
Cheating propensity? To commit mistake. Oh, okay. So everyone has these four mistakes. So when these people have these four mistakes and they are addicted to four sinful activities, what right they have to give us knowledge, and we have to accept that knowledge as the ultimate. And they are fooling us and fooling everyone. This modern knowledge is full of mistakes. We take the example. Okay. What is the biggest and very important theory the scientists give about the source of creation?
Evolution.
Evolution. That is a theory of evolution. That is the process of the living entities, how the living entities evolved. But the creation, how this creation?
Big Bang.
Okay. And what is this theory? They say that a big explosion took place. Suddenly one explosion took place. Isn't it? And then from that explosion so many planets were created and they were set into their orbits. Automatically. This is their theory? Okay. How many of you believe in this theory? Okay, can any one of you tell why you don't believe in this theory? Who can say? Anyone can tell why you don't believe in this theory? Okay.
This seems to be quite impractical to believe.
Ah. This is impractical. Another?
Science told from the system, the systematic things, unsystematic is possible. But for unsystematic things, systematic is not possible.
Okay, this is very scientific argument. Okay, very good. Anyone else?
Sir? Scientists say that it happened before 41 seven.
Okay, the scientists have their imperfect senses and their camera has also some imperfection. Camera has also a limit. You can see through the camera to a certain distance, not beyond that. So their creation has some limit also. So which they don't know, they are trying to speculate and give a theory to the public. But can they prove this theory? They cannot prove. They say that whatever we say, we prove it. But they don't prove. They just assume or speculate. Like if I will say that till yesterday, nothing was here in this spot where we are sitting. This building was not there. Last night a big explosion took place here. And today morning this building was created. It was all set. Can you believe? So this Big Bang theory is like that. That from explosion the system came. Everything came into system. Everything was created. Perfectly. So, this knowledge, modern knowledge, has many, many imperfections. But this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, which has been spoken 5,000 years ago, is still relevant today. This Bhagavad Gita speaks about the soul. This Bhagavad Gita speaks about super soul. This Bhagavad Gita speaks about creation. This Bhagavad Gita speaks about the Supreme Lord, the living entities, the process of creation, the karmic reactions. And it is all true even today, and it will remain true for the time to come. So this is eternal truth and eternal knowledge, which has no imperfection. No one can find, yes?
You said that all these are true.
Pardon?
You said that everything written in Gita is true, but what is the proof again? And again the question arises, what is the proof?
I'll say. You wait and listen. Okay. So all these things have been spoken by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Creator. We can give one example. Okay, let us take the scientists. So you go to the market and you purchase one computer. Okay, then how do you get knowledge about that computer? you get an operation manual with the computer. Generally, this is the process to know about the equipment. Okay, you purchase the equipment and get an operation manual. And everything is there. What are the components, how we can operate, in which way you operate, everything is there. Who gives this knowledge in the operation manual? The person who has created this computer, isn't it? The creator of the computer has given this knowledge through the operation manual. So when, even if we don't see the creator of that equipment, we don't know him, but just by purchasing the equipment and getting the operation manual, we get the knowledge about the equipment. And it works. When you follow the operation manual, it works. So, in the same way, we see the entire creation, the entire planetary system. Suppose take, and we don't see other planetary systems, we are far away from them. But at least we see the Earth, earthly planet we see. And in this earthly planet, we see there are rivers, there are oceans, there are mountains, we see the sun, we see the moon, we see the seasons, we see every day the sun comes out in the eastern horizon, then it sets in the western horizon, we see summer comes and after summer then rainy season comes and after rainy season winter comes. So there is a system behind this. Who has set the system? We see this material world. So this planet, even only take earthly planet. How to speak about other planets, we don't know. But information is still there. So, any intelligent person can understand that someone has set this system. Like all the planets are moving on their original orbits. Who put them in the orbits? So the system maker is there. The creator is there. This is a common sense. Like we purchase the equipment, we understand someone has created the equipment. So we see the system and we can understand that there is a creator. And how can we get knowledge about this creation? The creator can give knowledge about his creation. We cannot give. We can only speculate. So the creator, like we can speculate about the computer and go on speculating. But if we get the operation manual, there is no need of speculation. We get the knowledge and immediately operate. It is very easy. In the same way, instead of speculating about the creation, the creator has given his knowledge. And how this knowledge has come down to us? Through the operation manuals. And what are the operation manuals of this creation? This Bhagavad Gita. This is the operation manual of this creation. There are so many literatures. Someone may say, oh, this Bhagavad Gita was written by Vyasadeva only. So how it can be operation manual coming from God? So there is a system of this knowledge coming down. You might have heard in different classes also that how the first knowledge came from God. This description is already there. And let us take, first let us discuss about Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was not an ordinary human being. He was the incarnation of God. God has different incarnations. So Vyasadeva was his literary incarnation. He specifically came to put these Vedic literatures into writing. Why? Because this knowledge, this operation manual was in the form of Shruti. Shruti means hearing. In the beginning of the creation, this knowledge came down from the Supreme Lord through Brahma to Narada to Vyasadeva just by hearing. There was no paper that time, no books. So no writing was there. So it came down through the hearing process. And the people in those days, they had superior memory. Not like us. It has been described that in Kali Yuga, where we are living now, our memory is very short. Suppose whatever is discussed today in the class, some of you may not remember tomorrow. We have so short memory. And our duration of life has also come down. And gradually our bodily strength, mental strength is also going down. So this is the influence of Kali Yuga. But in Satya Yuga, people used to live for 1 lakh years. Because they are all following the path of religion, so they had good memory also. Once they will hear anything, they will remember exactly. They can repeat. The guru will speak, the disciple will remember immediately and repeat to his disciple or to others. They are so sharp memory. So that side was coming down through hearing process. So the first creation when take place, Brahma is the first living entity. And when Brahma took birth on a lotus which came out from the navel of Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So what Brahma saw in the beginning? Only darkness. And what this darkness represents? Ignorance. So that means we are all born in darkness. We are all born in ignorance. When we all took birth, that time, whether we had any knowledge, no one had no knowledge. We did not know anything. But gradually we acquire knowledge from our parents, family members, society, school, colleges. Gradually we acquire knowledge. So Brahma, he was the first living entity, and he was born in darkness. So for the first time Brahma wanted to know who is his creator. This was natural for Brahma. Like when we take birth, the first thing we want to know, who is our father and mother. Isn't that it? We want to know our creator. So Brahma also wanted to know his father and mother. So he could not see anyone because everything was in darkness. He could not understand anything. So he used his intelligence. Like we use our intelligence to know about our origin or about our father and mother. We may use our intelligence to know. So Brahma also did the same thing. First thing Brahma did, he wanted to know the origin of the stem of the lotus on which he was sitting. And Brahma went down through the lotus stem for 100 years according to Brahma's calculation. Still he could not find the root of the lotus stem. He became unsuccessful. This is very symbolic. Suppose a child was found in the street. Father, mother left that child. And child grows up and he wants to know his father and mother. And he tries. Can he find? Very difficult. Not very easy. So, Brahma wanted to find himself, his creator. He was unsuccessful. Again he came down, came up to the same lotus, and now he thought, oh, now what should I do? I tried my best, I used my intelligence, I could not know. Then Brahma surrendered. He said, no, by my own intelligence I cannot understand or know my creator. Unless my creator reveals himself to me. Like a child found in the street, he may try to know his father or mother. For many, many years he may not be able to do that. But if his father and mother come back to him and say, oh, you are my child, it is very easy to find for him. So, Brahma thought, unless my creator reveals to me, then I am unable to find him. So when Brahma surrendered like this, then he heard a sound. The creator spoke to Brahma, but he was not visible. But he spoke to Brahma. And he said two-syllable word, tapa, means you perform austerity and purify your existence. Then you will be able to know me. That was the intention. So Brahma sat down in the meditation and meditated on the unknown creator. And through that meditation, Brahma saw the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord revealed himself to Brahma and gave this knowledge about himself, about the creation, about Lord Brahma. So the Supreme Lord revealed all knowledge to Brahma. Brahma saw the Supreme Lord face to face and got knowledge about the Supreme Lord, the Creator. And Brahma in his turn, he gave this knowledge to his son Narada. And Narada, he gave this knowledge to Vyasadeva, who was another incarnation of the Supreme Lord, who was empowered to write down this Vedic knowledge. And in that way, this Vedic knowledge is coming to us through disciplic succession. So, the Supreme Lord, the Creator, he is giving this operation manual to us through his agents. Of course, Supreme Lord came down himself as Vyasadeva and he himself wrote. So there is no question of mistake that any other sage can do. So the knowledge, the operation manual, how to operate this material world, we can get that knowledge from this Bhagavad Gita. This is the operation of the material world, operation manual of the material world. So in this Bhagavad Gita, it has been described that Arjuna was perplexed in the beginning about his duty. This is also symbolic. Why Arjuna was perplexed? He was a pure devotee of the Lord. There was no question of being Arjuna perplexed about his duty. But how he became perplexed? Because the Supreme Lord Krishna wanted to give this knowledge through Arjuna to the people of this world for their benefit. That's why he used Arjuna as a bhaya media. And he put Arjuna into perplexion by his energy, you know. So Arjuna, being perplexed, he asked questions about his duty. Karpanya doso pahata svava prachamitang dharma shamudha cheta. Yasraya sani sthitam brohitan me sishyastehaṁ sadhi tamang prapannam. So when Arjuna perplexed, what did he do? He surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna. Accepted Krishna as his spiritual master. Because Krishna is the spiritual master of the entire universe. All the living entities. So Arjuna surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna. And asked Krishna to give him direction about his duty. And when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna revealed this knowledge to him, that what he should do in this situation, in this war of Mahabharata. This war of Mahabharata is also symbolic in our daily life. As I was describing, there is always fighting going on. In our daily life, in the material world, this Mahabharata is going on all the time. The fight between religion and irreligion. And we have to take sides. We have to choose the path. Then, what should we do? We should follow Arjuna's footsteps. Whatever Arjuna did, what Arjuna did at the end, after Krishna explained to him about Bhagavad Gita, said, what Arjuna said? That, my dear Krishna, whatever you order, I will do. He surrendered completely. Karishe vachanam tava. Whatever you say, I will do. My perplexion is now gone. My reservation is gone. Because Arjuna was thinking, oh, these are my family members. How can I kill them? Even if they are supporting irreligion. Still Arjuna was thinking, oh, they are my brothers. They are my family members. Oh, he is my guru, Dronacharya. He is my great grandfather. How can I kill them? No. Even if they follow irreligion, I cannot kill them. But what is the duty of a Kshatriya? Kshatriya's duty is to protect religion and eliminate irreligion. So Arjuna became perplexed because of his familial affection. So he relinquished his duty as a Kshatriya. He did not want to do his duty as a Kshatriya, as a ruler. By not punishing the people who are following religion, Arjuna was indirectly supporting them. Isn't it? So that means Arjuna was deviating from his path of religiousness, path of his duty. And Krishna convinced him by giving the instructions of Bhagavad Gita that how one should follow the path of religion, how should perform his duty irrespective of his familial affection. In those days, the great kings who were Rajarshis, saintly kings, what they were doing, how they are performing the path of religion, how they are following the path of religion, because the king is the emblem of religion. He was the representative of the Supreme Lord. So we can see the Supreme Lord Ramchandra, when he acted as a king, he established the path of an ideal king. So when one person in his kingdom accused Lord Ramchandra's wife, Sita, though Lord Ramchandra knew perfectly well Sita was the most chaste wife in the entire universe. But when one person accused Sita, what Lord Ramchandra did? He relinquished Sita. Though she was his dearest wife, chaste wife, and he knew it very well. But just to please the subjects, because he was the king, and the subjects should not point out any mistake to the king. Otherwise, they will not follow the instruction of the king. So the king should be, or the ruler, should be above or beyond all suspicion, all doubts, all partialities. He should be impartial. Even his own son commits murder, the king has to punish him like any ordinary subject, any ordinary citizen. He cannot think, oh, he is my son, like today's politicians are doing. He is my son, I am in power, how can I protect him? So he will not be punished. So then what happens? The people lose faith in the leader. Oh, he is supporting his own family members. But when we will commit murder, he will punish us. But when his son commits murder, he will not do anything. So this is the degradation of religion. So Lord Ramchandra, he set the perfect example of a king, a perfect example of a ruler. So everyone will learn from his rule. How to rule a kingdom? How to become impartial? So Lord Krishna, while instructing Arjuna, he was speaking about religion. Here he says, Sarva dharman paritejya mamekam saranam vraja. So Lord Krishna, he is the protector of religion and he is the creator of religion. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it has been described, what is religion? Can anyone say? What is the definition of religion? Very good. Dharma to sakshat bhagavata pranita. So whatever instruction is given by the Supreme Lord for us to follow that instruction is religion. See, the Lord says you should do this thing, that is religion. The Lord says this, you should not do this thing, then that is irreligion. This is the basic point. That we should know that what is religion. Of course, this is the supreme religion. When you follow the instruction of the Supreme Lord, this is the supreme religion. But there are people who cannot follow the order of the Supreme Lord fully. That happens. Because all people are not up to the standard. Like we say, see in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. When Krishna instructed Arjuna and ordered him to follow his instructions, Arjuna very easily did. But when Krishna spoke to Duryodhan, gave the message of peace to him, did Duryodhan follow? No. He did not follow. He rejected Krishna's proposal. That means he preferred to follow the path of irreligion. So when Krishna instructed Arjuna, Arjuna immediately accepted. Okay, kari seva chanantam. Whatever you do, whatever you say, I will do. Now, my illusion is gone. I was thinking, oh, they are my family members, how can I kill them? So that is over now. Now if you tell to kill my family members, I will kill my family members. This is the type of surrender Krishna wants from us. This is the supreme surrender. And Arjuna did that and set the example. But everyone cannot do this all the time. People are different. Then Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, according to your surrender, I will reciprocate. Ye yathamang prapadyante tang statheva bhajame. So according to your surrender, I will reciprocate. So if you are surrendered 5%, Krishna can reciprocate 5%. And if you are surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna 50%, Krishna will reciprocate 50%. And if you are surrendered 100%, Krishna will take full charge of you. Yoga khema baha meham. Whatever you have, Krishna will give protection. Whatever you lack, Krishna will fulfill that, give you that, if you are lacking something. So that is Krishna's full protection. So here in this verse, Krishna summarizes this Bhagavad instructions of Bhagavad Gita. And he says, Sarva dharman paritaja mamekam saranam braja. You give up all varieties of religion. But now we heard there is only one religion. Follow the instruction of Krishna. But then what is this Krishna is telling? Varieties of religion? That means there are different religion also. So what are they? So in the Vedas, when Vyasadeva wrote the Vedas, he was writing the Vedas. Vedas means knowledge. He was giving this knowledge for all types of people in the world. There are different types of people in different gunas, modes. Someone is in sattva-gun, someone is in rajogun, someone is in tamogun. Mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. And according to one's mode, one will act. So, one who is in tamogun, he may not be able to surrender to Krishna 100%. But then, how he is going to be elevated to the path of Krishna consciousness? What he has to do? That's why Vyasadeva gave instruction in the Vedas. For these type of people, those who are in tamogun, what should they do? Those who are in rajogun, what should they do? What activity they should follow to elevate themselves and come to the platform of sattva-gun? And those who are in sattva-gun, what should they do to come to the platform of shuddha sattva, pure sattva-gun? So there is a gradual process of gradual elevation. So accordingly, different instructions are given to the different types of people. Those who are in sattva-gun, they are Brahmins. For Brahmins, some different instructions are given in the Vedas. What are the duties of a Brahmin? Those who are in rajogun, they are Kshatriyas. So in the Vedas, instruction is given that what are the duties of a Kshatriya. Those who are in Kshatriya, passion and mode of ignorance mixed, they are vices. And what should be their activity? Or what should be their duty? And those who are in ignorance, they are Shudras. And what should be their duty? Those who are Brahmacharis, what should be their duty? Those who are Grihasthas, what should be their duty? Those who are Sannyasis, what should be their duty? Those who are vanaprasthis, what should be their duty? Those who are householders, the chief of the family, what should be his duty? What should be the duty of a husband? What should be the duty of a wife? What should be the duty of a son or a daughter? What should be the duties of the parents? All these things have been described in the Vedas. So people, by following these instructions, they can elevate themselves gradually to the platform of Krishna consciousness. So while speaking Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also was thinking about different kinds of people in this material world, how they all can be elevated to the platform of full surrender, come to the platform of sarvadharman paritej. That's why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna spoke about karma yoga, Krishna spoke about jnana yoga, Krishna spoke about dhyana yoga, Krishna spoke about ashtanga yoga, Krishna spoke about bhakti yoga. Otherwise there was no need of speaking about so many yogas. Krishna only have spoken bhakti yoga. But Krishna knew perfectly well that everyone cannot be immediately be elevated to bhakti yoga. Some people will be there, those who are attached to jnana, some people will be there who are attached to karma, some people will be there who are attached to ashtanga yoga, some people will be attached to meditation. So Krishna has given instruction to different kinds of people by which they can elevate themselves and come to the platform of sarvadharman paritej. So when Krishna speaks sarvadharman, means all these different duties of the living entity, all the different responsibilities of the living entities, which is meant to elevate themselves to the platform of Krishna consciousness. That's why it is said, Nutpadayat yadirati samaye vahi kevalam. Varnasramam sarvatam vishvaksena kathasuya. So Saman is following very strictly the path of varnasrama dharma. But if he has not developed attachment for the hearing of the glorious deeds or glorious activities of the Supreme Lord, then he is only wasting his time. So the goal is to develop love for Krishna, Krishna's instructions, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's service. That is the goal of life. So when Krishna says, give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me, as Arjuna did, he gave up the religion of what? Kshatriya religion. He gave up. He was supposed to fight. But he said, no, I will not fight. He gave up that religion. And also, Arjuna was hesitating to perform his duty, taking into account the relationship with his family members. So after hearing from Krishna, then Arjuna gave up everything. Gave up his familiar relationships or his attachments, and he stood up with bow and arrow and ready to fight following Krishna's instruction. Means now Arjuna was considering that time. So many considerations were coming in Arjuna's mind. Oh, if I kill my family members, what will happen? Then I will incur sin. And the sin will swallow our family tradition. The women in our family will become irreligious and they will produce Varnasankaras. In this way, I will be the cause of ruination of my family. Arjuna's arguments are very strong arguments. But Krishna said, no. There is a supreme dharma. This dharma is okay. But paro dharma, there is a supreme dharma, which is above all these dharmas. And what is the supreme dharma? Savai punsa paro dharma jato bhakti adhokhyate. To perform the supreme duty towards the supreme personality of Godhead is parama dharma, supreme dharma. To follow his instruction is the supreme dharma. That's why Krishna says, you give up all these varieties of religion. You follow the supreme religion, means my advice. And what is his advice? Mamekam saranam braja. You surrender to me alone, Krishna says. You surrender to me alone, not anyone else. Sometimes people say, oh, everyone is God. People are worshipping Kali, Durga, Lord Shiva, Brahma, Surya, Ganeshji, so many demigods, Santoshima, so many demigods they are worshipping. And even they are worshipping also so-called human gods. So, and sometimes their god also dies. So-called god. But the God, the Supreme Lord, he is above death. He is above birth, old age and disease. But the so-called gods, they are also dying. But they are proclaiming themselves as God. And they are actually fooling people, and there are fools who accept them as God. Anyway, so Krishna says, Mamekam saranam braja. You only take shelter of me. Me means Krishna. Krishna is speaking. You take shelter of me. Not any demigods. Because the demigods have no independent power. They are getting power from Krishna only. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matta Sarvam Pravartate. I am the source of everything, both material and spiritual. So we have to worship the supreme source, the source of everything, source of the material world and spiritual world. And then Krishna says, that if you surrender to me, what benefit you will get? Because everyone is thinking about benefit. Before doing any work, everyone calculates how much benefit I will get, how much profit, how much loss. So Krishna says that if you surrender to me alone, so what profit, what benefit you will get? Aham tam sarva papebhyo mukheshyam. Because you are all suffering in this material world. Why you are suffering? Because of your previous karmic reactions. You have done so many sinful activities in your previous lives, you have forgotten, and the reactions are coming. So whenever you are suffering, you should understand this is because of this previous sinful reactions coming to you. When you are getting some happiness, you should understand you have done some pious activity in your previous life. Because of that, you are getting some happiness. But none of us want to become unhappy. We all want to become happy. But because of our previous sinful reactions, we are getting this unhappiness. So how to get rid of this unhappiness and become happy all the time? That's why Krishna says, if you surrender to me alone, I will make you free from all sinful reactions. You are suffering from sinful reactions, I will make you free from sinful reactions. That means no suffering for you anymore if you surrender to me. Don't worry. If you are worried, oh, what will happen to your sinful reactions if you surrender to me? But I am promising you, I will make you free from all sinful reactions. That means anyone who surrenders to Krishna, his sinful reactions are eradicated. He becomes free from sinful reactions, free from unhappiness. But someone may question that we see that devotees are also suffering, even if they have surrendered to Krishna. So, what is the answer? Anyone can say? Okay. So some people are not completely surrendered. That's why Krishna says, according to your surrender, I will reciprocate. So if you are 100% surrender, Krishna can make you 100% free from sinful reactions. If you are 5% surrender, so you can get free 5% only. Rest will come. So it is up to you. If you want to become free from all sinful reactions 100%, then you have to become 100% surrender. Then you must know what is 100% surrender. Anyone knows what is 100% surrender? How you can do that? I read in the purport today. Anyone remembers? Everyone is looking towards book. Okay. There are 6 kinds of surrender. Anyone wants to surrender fully, then 6 kinds of surrenders are there. Whatever is favorable for your devotional service, you only accept that. Number 1. Number 2, whatever is unfavorable for your devotional service to Krishna, you reject immediately. Does not matter how much you like that. Someone may like to smoke cigarette, but it is not favorable to Krishna consciousness. One should immediately give up. So whatever is unfavorable, immediately you should give up. And then, we are always worried about our protection. We don't know what will happen on the road. Or we are in the middle of the night walking to a distant place, we don't know what will happen to us. Or we are in the middle of the jungle, so many ferocious animals may come and attack us, we don't know. So we are always worried about protection. But a surrendered devotee, he is not worried about his protection. Why? Because he has full faith on Krishna. That wherever I go, Krishna will protect me. This is Krishna's promise. That Krishna told to Arjuna, Arjuna, you declare boldly, mine devotees will never perish, never vanquish. I will give them protection. So a surrendered devotee has full faith that Krishna will certainly protect him. That's why he is not worried. You have heard about Dhruva Maharaj. How old was he when he left home? 5 years old. And he went to the forest at the age of 5. And in the forest there are so many ferocious animals, lions, tigers, bears. But who gave him protection? And Dhruva Maharaj, how he was not worried about his protection? He was not afraid that, oh, I am going to the forest, what will happen if a lion will come and attack me? But he never thought of this. If he would have thought, he would have never gone to the forest. But he had full faith that Krishna will protect me. That is full surrender. And then sometimes people think, oh, what will happen in my future? How I will be maintained? I am serving in an office where the boss may kick me out, or I am doing my business may fail, or I am living in the temple authorities may kick me out from the temple. So what will I do? How I will maintain myself? Sometimes people may think like this and make their own arrangements of maintenance, make some money, keep in the banks, or do some other alternative arrangements. But a surrendered devotee, what he will do? He will depend on Krishna. That Krishna will maintain me. He is my maintainer. He is Vishwambhar. He is maintaining the entire universe. He is maintaining the living entities of this entire universe. So if he is maintaining all the living entities, can he not maintain me, his devotee? So the devotee should have firm faith on Krishna's mercy. That Krishna will protect me surely and he will maintain me also surely. And a devotee always will remain humble within his heart. He will not give rise to false ego, which will destroy the creeper of devotion within his heart. This false ego is the greatest stumbling block in the path of advancement in devotional service. That's as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us, Trinadapi Sunichena Tarvarapi Sahishma. We must remain humbler than the grass in the street. We must become tolerant, more tolerant than the tree. And we always give respect to others and don't expect respect for ourselves. This should be the mentality of a surrendered devotee. And with this mentality, a devotee, what should he do? He throws himself, Atma Nikheva. Means he will throw himself at the lotus feet of Krishna. That, my dear Krishna, from today I am yours. I have no one in this material world. You are my only shelter. You are my father. You are my mother. You are everything to me. You are my brother. You are my friend. You are everything to me. So from today I am throwing myself at your lotus feet. Please do whatever you like with me. So this is the mood of a fully surrendered devotee. And when one does this, Krishna takes full charge of that devotee. So sometimes we see that a devotee is fully surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna. But still he undergoes some unhappiness, some dangers. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was fully surrendered. Whole family was fully surrendered at the lotus feet of Krishna. But still they had to undergo the problems of losing their kingdom, the problems of being their wife insulted in the assembly hall. So all these things happened. So what can we say to this? When Yudhishthira Maharaj was fully surrendered, it should have not happened. But Krishna sometimes uses his pure devotees to set the example for other devotees in the material world. So Krishna used Yudhishthira Maharaj because he was the supporter of religion. So sometimes by following the path of religion, we may have to undergo some tribulations, like Yudhishthira Maharaj underwent. Severe tribulations. But Yudhishthira Maharaj never left faith in Krishna. So on the path of religion, sometimes we may be inconvenienced, or we may have to undergo some tribulations. But we should not give up the path of religion at any rate or any moment. We should have firm faith in Krishna, and Krishna will surely protect us. So what happened to Yudhishthira Maharaj? Because he had firm faith in Krishna, then Krishna protected Yudhishthira Maharaj. He gave back his kingdom. Though Pandavas had only 7 Akshavani soldiers, and Kauravas had 11 Akshavani soldiers. So, Kauravas had greater number of soldiers, and they had greater warriors in their side. In Pandava side, Arjuna was the greatest warrior, but Arjuna was not able to fight with Bhishma, Drona and Karna. Arjuna was not an equal fighter with these 3 heroes. So Kauravas were in better position. They had more soldiers, more great fighters in their side, and they had all the material opulences in their side. And most of the kings were also siding Duryodhana. The Pandavas, they had no material opulence, and their soldiers are less, and they had no great warrior to be equal with Bhishma, Drona and Karna. But they had one person in their side. Who was he? Krishna. Because they are following the path of religion, so Krishna took their side. And what are the results? The Pandavas came out victorious in the battle. They got back their kingdom. And Krishna gave them so much opulence to Yudhishthira Maharaj that even the king of heaven, Indra, It is said that the king of heaven has the greatest opulence. But seeing the opulence of Yudhishthira Maharaj, the king of heaven, Indra, became very envious. Seeing the opulence of Yudhishthira Maharaj. And who gave this opulence to Yudhishthira Maharaj? Krishna gave. Why? Because he is Lakshmipati. He is the husband of Lakshmi Devi. People are worshipping Lakshmi Devi to get her favor. But they are not worshipping Narayan. They are forgetting Narayan. Only Lakshmi. They have no business with Narayan. But they forget that Lakshmi Devi is the chaste wife of Narayan. So when someone worships Lakshmi Devi alone, and Lakshmi Devi bestows her mercy to that person, he gets some opulence, material opulence. But Lakshmi Devi's one name is Chanchala. Means she is very swift in traveling. She goes from one house to another house very swiftly. Lakshmi Devi. So those who are worshippers of Lakshmi Devi, Lakshmi Devi goes to that worshipper, bestows her mercy, gives some opulence. Then when she goes away to another house, then this man's opulence is gone. Chanchala. Another man becomes opulent. So the worshippers of only Lakshmi Devi get some opulence, but their opulence is temporary. But those who are worshipping Lakshmi Devi with Narayan, when Lakshmi Devi is with her husband Narayan, so she gives up her nature of Chanchala. So she becomes steady. No more Chanchala in front of husband Narayan. So when Lakshmi Devi is with Narayan, she remains steady. That means those who are worshipping Lakshmi Narayan and getting their mercy, then their opulence is steady. That will not go away. So the devotees of Lakshmi Narayan or Radha Krishna or Sitaram, their opulence becomes steady. And they use that opulence in Lord's service. They don't use that opulence in their own sense gratification. So sometimes people think, oh, if you worship other demigods, you can become opulent. If you worship Krishna, you will become very poor. Sometimes people say this. But this is not true. Because you worship other demigods or Lakshmi Devi alone, you may get some riches, then you will lose it very soon. But when you worship Lakshmi with Narayan, your opulence will remain with you all the time. So that's why those who are intelligent, they worship Lakshmi with Narayan, or Radha with Krishna, or Sita with Ram. They don't become like Ravana. What Ravana did? He wanted to enjoy Sita alone, without Ram. And what are the results? He was killed. So we don't want to become like Ravana. We want to become like Hanuman. Worship Sita and Ram, or Radha and Krishna, Lakshmi with Narayan, and get their mercy. Then in our life we will be free from all sinful reactions, free from all material unhappiness, and get material prosperity and become successful in material life. And at the end, when we think about Krishna, at the end of our life, then we go back to Krishna. So we become benefited in this life and in the next, both ways. will, in both lives will be benefited by surrendering to Krishna. And this will perfect our human form of life. We can become perfect human being by serving Krishna, becoming his devotee and going back to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions?
You may ask for 5 minutes.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions you have?
If you don't have question, then 5 minutes will have kirtan.
Better you ask questions so that you have to clarify.
Yeah, if you have, you are free to ask.
Don't fear. Don't feel hedge.
Okay. So this is very good question. Did everyone understand this question? There are so many different types of religion. And those who are following this Krishna consciousness, they can only understand Krishna, and they can, if they can be fully surrendered, they can go back to Krishna. But what about others? Those are following other religions without knowing Krishna, whether they can go back to Krishna or not. Isn't it? This is the question. Okay. You see, religion, as we described, what is religion? To follow the instruction of God. And how many gods are there? Only one God. Of course, the God can expand himself into unlimited numbers, like Krishna expands himself into many forms. From one, he can become many. From many, he can become one. So when we say Rama, Narayan, Nrisimha, Vamana, so they are expansions of Krishna. Krishna has expanded into that form to perform some specific purpose or perform some specific duty according to need of the time. So God is, in principle, God is one. And God's instructions are also one. So if God's instructions are one, God cannot give different instructions to different people. So then there can be only one religion. If God's instruction is one, there can be only one religion. And from the beginning of the creation, there was only one religion. This Sanatana Dharma we say, or this Krishna consciousness, this is Sanatana Dharma, means eternal religion, which is there from the very beginning. This religion is there. The instructions of the Lord are there. But when we speak of other religions, when these other religions start? What is the timing? When did they come into force? We can say that when Christianity came into force, how many years back? 2011. 2000 years back Christianity came into force. How many years back Islam came? Okay. How many?
1500 years.
Huh? When it came? Huh? Okay. 1500 years. When Buddhism came? Before Christ. 2500 years. When Jainism came? Or whatever, Judaism or whatever ism is there. You can find a date to that. It started from there. Then those people who followed that religion, what was their religion before that they started this religion? What was their religion? Everyone was in Sanatana Dharma. Before this, all these religions came, before that, everyone was a Sanatana Dharma, following the Vedic principles. And these religions started later on. Of course, we accept Prophet Muhammad or Jesus Christ. But whom did they preach? They are prophets. When Jesus Christ preached, what did he say? He never said that he was God. He said, I am the Son of God. Prophet Muhammad also said the same thing. They are sons of God. So nothing wrong with that. And whom they were preaching? They are preaching to very degraded people. Those who are giving up this Vedic culture. Those who have become very, very degraded. You read Bhagavatam, it is stated in the Bhagavatam that there was a king, I forgot the name. His sons, they did not follow the Vedic culture. So they were banished to different parts of the world. And they created their degraded culture. You go to different parts of the world even today, you will find somewhere Vishnu temple is coming up from the ground. Somewhere Shiva Linga is coming up. Somewhere Vishnu Murtis are coming up from the ground. This archaeological department, they are finding different things from the ground. So it proves that this Vedic culture had spread all over the world. It was there. But gradually, degradation took place and degraded culture started in different parts of the world. One emperor was ruling the whole world that time. That's why the Vedic culture was prevalent in all over the world. So all these prophets, they were preaching to very degraded people. And what was their basic teachings? What Jesus Christ said, thou shalt not kill. You should not kill any living entity. This was the basic teaching of Jesus Christ. But what was the result? He himself was killed by his followers. He himself was killed. That means those followers or those people at that time, they could not actually even understand Jesus Christ's teachings properly. He was giving the basic teachings of religion. He was not speaking about higher things. Still people could not understand him. They are so degraded. So, in Islam or Christianity or other religions, we may find the basic teachings, some basic teachings of religion, Sanatana Dharma. And those prophets could not teach the higher subject matter about God. Who is God? How does He look like? Where does He stay? They could not tell these things to these people. But the only thing they said, there is God. And we are son of God. This much they could say. So, the basic teachings of religion, though it is there, but people are not following. And they have no clear understanding about God. Though they accept God, but they have no clear understanding. But if you read Bhagavad Gita, higher teachings are there. Who is God? Where does He stay? How does He look like? What is the living entity? What is the relationship of living entity with God? All this knowledge is given in Bhagavad Gita. So this Sanatana Dharma, the teachings of Sanatana Dharma or Krishna consciousness is full in itself. So those who are following different religions, if they are true to their religions, because sometimes people say they are Christian but they are not following their religion. They are killing animals, eating animals. Though they are special, they should not kill. So if someone will follow truly the basic teachings of religion, they will be elevated gradually. Gradually they will be elevated and come to the path of Krishna consciousness. Then they will be delivered from the cycle of birth and death. That's why Krishna says, Bahunang janmanang vante jnanavana mang prapadyate. After many, many lifetimes, many, many births, those who are in full knowledge of Me can surrender unto Me. Unless one is in full knowledge, one cannot surrender to Krishna. So Krishna says, those who are in full knowledge, they will surrender unto Me. And anyone will surrender to Krishna, naturally they will go back to Krishna. Because they know who is God, where does He live, everything, all the address is there. But in other religions, some information is only there. Details are not there. But by those followers, if they follow strictly, they can be elevated and come to the platform of Krishna consciousness in some lifetime and will be also delivered. But Krishna consciousness is the basic religion and the original religion. So those who want to come through different levels, they can come, they can choose. But those who directly want to come to Krishna consciousness, option is there. If you want to take many births, many lifetimes, then you come to Krishna consciousness, it is up to you. Staircases are lifts. Prabhupada gives this example. Either you go through the staircase or you go through the lift. Which is better? Yes. Even this is a very good question. Many people, they follow the Vedas. They study the Vedas. But they don't understand Krishna. Or they don't surrender to Krishna. And Krishna also speaks about them in Bhagavad Gita. Vedaishya sarver aham eva vedya. Among all the Vedas, I am only to be known, Krishna says. Why He is only to be known? Na Vedanta krit Vedavit cha aham. Krishna says, I am Vedanta krit. I have created these Vedas. I have given this knowledge of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole world. So Vedanta krit and Vedavit, because I have created the Vedas, I know the Vedas. I know the import of the Vedas. So that's why everyone should surrender to me, because I am the goal of the Vedas. So if someone is studying Vedas, but he does not understand Krishna, his studying of the Vedas is useless. He is only wasting his time. So sometimes we see that our devotees, they don't study Vedas, but they have surrendered to Krishna and they are serving Krishna. So they are better than the people, those who are studying Vedas and don't surrender to Krishna. So that means those who come to Krishna consciousness, those who surrender to Krishna, they have studied all the Vedas, they have performed all the pious activities in their previous lifetimes. So in this lifetime, they don't have to waste their time in studying Vedas. Directly they surrender to Krishna. So we should think that we have already done all those things in previous lifetimes. Sometimes our devotees, they think like that. Oh, we are not studying Vedas, we are not studying other Puranas. Because we have already done that and already understood the import. That's why we have come to Krishna consciousness in this life. Why go back?
Someone asked you, what is the guarantee about how to understand that, yes, I have already studied.
Yeah.
I have studied all the Vedas, all the Vedic scriptures. And what is the proof? How can
because we have understood Krishna, the Supreme Lord. That is the point.
Yeah. Because you have accepted Krishna, that proves itself, you have already studied Krishna.
वृंद की निताय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि ओम
प्रसाद।